Welcome to the Droma Preventative Health Podcast, hosted by the Jewish Orthodox Women's Medical Association. We provide you with up-to-date information on health topics geared towards the Orthodox Jewish community. This podcast content is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended as medical advice or as a substitute for the medical advice of a physician.
Everyone deserves to be safe. The LAVE initiative provides mental health support to those impacted by intimate partner violence, also known as domestic violence. We take a holistic approach to help survivors of any age find ways to heal and thrive. Our virtual and in-person services include crisis and individual counseling sessions, support groups, psychotherapy, community-sensitive emergency housing, and linkages to a variety of community resources. The LAVE initiative is brought to the community by the Jewish Board in partnership with UJA Federation. For more information, contact us confidentially at lave@jbfcs.org. That's lev@jbfcs.org or 646-273-1800.
Welcome to the Jewish Orthodox Women's Medical Association, or JOMA podcast. I'm your host, Lisa Minkin. I'm a general pediatrician and proud JOMA member. And today I'm really honored and really excited to interview someone anonymously for the first time. Before I talk a little bit more about that, I'm going to say, please, if there's somebody you want to listen to, a topic you want to hear, a comment about our podcast, you yourself want to be interviewed, please reach out to us at health, H-E-A-L-T-H, at joma.org. So I don't have an introduction to today's guest because she's going to be anonymous. I will not be telling you her name. I will not be giving you her bio, obviously. I do want to make a couple comments. First of all, if other people listening say, hey, I have a story I want to tell and I want to do it anonymously, I can do that. That's number one. Number two, I'm a pediatrician. I am not a gynecologist. We're talking today about adenomyosis, and which, by the way, this is a more sensitive topic. So it's for mature audiences only. Number three, because I am a pediatrician, I am not an expert in adenomyosis, which is a gynecological disorder, which we will talk about. I will say that this should be listened to together with the podcast with Dr. Chana Yandorf. Actually, the person I'm interviewing today said, hey, can you please have someone give a talk about adenomyosis, which is closely related to endometriosis. Adenomyosis is often called the evil twin of endometriosis, although someone pointed out that endometriosis is a horrible condition, a very difficult condition, and it makes it sound like it's the nice twin. They're both difficult conditions, but they're both related. And she suggested that I interview someone. I interviewed Dr. Yandorf, who did a great job. And so I do recommend that you listen to that podcast first to learn the medical background, as that is not something I'm going to stop to talk about as much. And also, this is not my area of expertise. I also want to point out that this is my guest's personal story. It's her lived experience, and that's her viewpoint. It is from her viewpoint. It is not from the doctor's viewpoint. And I'm glad to give her a chance to tell us the story. It's an important story on so many points to be learned from it, both by lay people and by physicians and other healthcare professionals. I really think it's important. But some of the things we mentioned, like, for example, she mentioned beating endo by Dr. Iris Orbuck, who herself has endometriosis, was very helpful to her. She also, in this book, has a lot of more holistic / alternative type therapies or ideas. And as a JOMA podcaster, I present evidence-based medicine. And when something is not as clearly evidence-based, it does not mean it won't help people. And we talked about, you know, do what works for you. I just want to put it out there that say, for example, specific dietary approaches may not be proven to work. It might help you, it might not. And also a very important point about the surgeries that my interviewee talks about. She talks about endometrial excision surgery, where the endometriosis lesions are actually taken out, as opposed to an ablation procedure where they're kind of zapped. So she says you must make sure to get the excision surgery. It is, you know, the one to get and not ablation surgery. And again, this podcast is for informational purposes only. It does not substitute actual medical advice from a healthcare professional. There is the viewpoint that it may depend. It's not so simple, number one, on your particular medical condition. And number two, what we didn't talk about, but it's really important to point out, is that the type of endometriosis surgeons who do excision surgery often do not take insurance. I heard Dr. Orbach speak, and she was talking about how really the reimbursement rate is just not adequate as far as insurance goes, and that's why. But that is, you know, cost is a factor to keep in mind, and I want to be very transparent about that. So I hope people enjoy this talk and learn a lot from it, both physicians and lay people. And if you have any comments, again, please reach out to us at health@joma.org. Thank you so much for joining me today. I'm really excited to do this with you and to hear your story. So I'm going to let you just go right into it, please.
Okay. I just want to give a little background how this came to be that I am doing this and why I'm doing this. I know that you always ask for ideas, for suggestions, you know, things that people want you to talk about on your podcast. And I think I messaged you saying, I think adenomyosis, endometriosis mm-hmm. are really good topics, because so many women struggle with that. So many people have those diseases and don't know it, or still trying to find the answers. And I don't think a lot of doctors even know enough about it. So I think it would be a great, in fact, that's how I got into this, which I guess I'll get to. And then we were messaging back and forth. And at one point I said, yeah, cause you know, when I had that, and then I said, I should just tell you my story. And you said, I would love it if you could do that on a podcast. Would you do that? And I said, thought about it. And I thought, you know what? I think I will, because it's just been so long and frustrating. And I think it'll help me make a little bit of sense out of it, but also, you know, maybe there's something helpful for people who are listening, who, first of all, to feel validated, because it can be very, very lonely. You know, it's one of those things where you look fine and you, most of the time you can function, but you're really in pain and nobody knows how much you're suffering. So, you know, having that can be, you know, can feel less lonely. And also because, you know, there might be information in my story that could be useful and helpful to somebody else. So.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate you doing this. And, you know, this is my first anonymous interview. So
I'm honored.
It's a little different, but I thank you, first of all, for getting me to do the topic, which we did with Hannah Jandorf. And I'm going to post the link to that podcast so people don't have to scroll back and find it. And she was great, right?
She really was. I want to, you know, if people want to learn about it, you know, from a doctor's point of view, I would say definitely listen to it, because she really talked about it in a really comprehensive way that, you know, to get it started. And if you're having those kind of symptoms, you know, things that you could ask your gynecologist about. And I think that was a really great podcast. So,
you know, she did a great job. And again, I have to thank you for getting me to do this.
Yeah.
So yes, I love it when listeners give me ideas, especially when, you know, I'm a pediatrician, so I tend to do more pediatrics and mental and behavioral health than anything else. So I can neglect topics, and that's why I'm just asking people to do it. So I'm really glad that you did. But you pointed out there's a difference between a doctor's viewpoint and, of course, the patient's viewpoint. So mm-hmm. I would love if you would go back to the beginning of your particular journey with adenomyosis.
Oh, okay. Well, also I had adenomyosis and endometriosis. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, which I guess I'll explain, they often go together.
Mm-hmm.
So, so it started with, you know, I really don't know like it's hard, you know, like they say that one of the main symptoms is, you know, heavy periods, painful periods, you know, that are, you think people say menstrual cramps are normal, but pain like that is not. And, you know, I can't say that it was really so terrible. There was a period of time where like I had terrible menstrual pain that I couldn't, you know, alleviate with Advil. And I remember that was on a Sunday and I didn't know what to do with myself. And I like couldn't wait till Monday morning when I could call the doctor. And he said, oh, okay, here, I'll prescribe, prescription, you know, naproxen, prescription Aleve. And it really made a difference. And then there were times where like, if I don't know, my period started when I wasn't ready and I didn't have it on me, where I'd have to like really like white knuckle it till I could get it. But mostly I can't say that my periods were so, so painful. Pretty heavy though. But it was really pain just throughout the month, like just, you know, not constant either, like up to a certain point, like once things progressed, like there was always pain in the background and then it would flare up. And in the beginning, it would be like every once in a while, every, I don't know, let's say 3-4 months, I'd get like this terrible pelvic pain where it would like, but I couldn't move. I mean, it was painful to walk. It was painful to sit. And the first time that it happened, I called my gynecologist and I said, I'm having this terrible pelvic pain, you know, and, you know, they would check me out. And he said, you know, everything seems okay. We'll send you for an ultrasound. And the ultrasound showed cysts in my ovaries, and which I was told probably shouldn't be. They weren't big enough to be causing the pain, probably not the source of the pain, and nothing to really worry about, but we'll keep an eye on it, you know, do a follow-up ultrasound in like 3 months. And this kept happening and happening, and I was getting like really frustrated. And I have to say also, because I know I'm not the only one who had this, but my gynecologist at the time, I remember he once, you know, at one of these times, and he said, okay, go get an ultrasound, you know, and he gave me a prescription for an ultrasound, you know, some at a radiology place. And I was in his office, I think within that, you know, like after the 3 months when I was supposed to go do the follow-up and for something else. And he said, oh, did you ever do that follow-up? And I said, no, I didn't get to it yet. I said, but like, can't you just do it? Cause he had an ultrasound machine in his office. He's like, yeah, I could do it. It just makes my life easier if you would go there, which is a pretty obnoxious thing to say. And I know I'm not the only one who's got an attitude like that. And that went on for a while.
I'm stuck. I just want to interrupt you for 1 second. I'm stuck on the fact that you're having pain that is clearly not normal. I just want to point out that that is not normal amount of pain to have.
Yeah. Well, you know, what would happen is that like I would feel the pain. Like I would feel it starting up. And then, you know, after the first 2 or 3 times that I had this, I stopped even going to the doctor because I knew like, okay, this is a thing that happens. I probably have a cyst in my ovary. It'll feel really bad for about a week and then it'll ease up and, you know, okay, maybe it'll happen again. So I did this like a few times and then I would just leave it until every few times that it happened, I would say, okay, this is not normal. I mean, it doesn't seem normal to me. Let me call the doctor again this time. And, you know, so I'd go through the same thing again, do the ultrasound, cysts in my ovaries, but shouldn't be a problem, but we'll follow up anyway. And then they would either be gone or be smaller or, you know, and they would say like, yeah, but you're okay. And
because they're not seeing what's going on, which is not uncommon for this particular disorder.
Right. Right. But what, like, you know, when I look back on it, I think, you know, and that gave me like a little bit of peace of mind because I thought like, okay, if this is going on for so long and nothing new is showing up, I can, you know, I don't really have to worry that there's something terribly wrong going on and it's just pain and I'll figure it out.
But wait, what do you mean by just pain? You said a week.
Right.
You said these episodes were lasting a week. I mean, were you able to function?
I was able to function because I, you know, I pushed myself through it because I didn't want to be, I mean, there were times when I really, really couldn't, when I was like, but that was like, not so much in the beginning, like this is like a 10-year journey that we're talking about. So in the beginning, it would be that I would, you know, like maybe have 1 day where I had to, or 2 days where I like really could not do my what I had to do. There were a couple of days where like I didn't go to the, you know, I was planning to go to the gym and I didn't. There were times when I like wanted to go for a walk and I didn't. But you know what? You're saying this to me like, wait, that's not normal. And now when I look back on it, I can say that also. But you know, when you're going through right. it, you really don't realize that. And even now looking back, I'm thinking, why did I power through for so long? You know, like when it was so painful. But right. you know, at that stage, it wasn't so painful. It was just right. painful. And you know,
right, I'm interrupting. I'm interrupting you because I purposely interrupted you for that, because I think that's something we often do as women.
Yes, for sure.
So I want to focus on that for just a second and let everybody hold space for that for just a minute, that our pain, we have to take it seriously, right? Mm-hmm. And not let anyone talk us out of that this is not normal.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, thank you for doing that, because that's really something that I've only learned like recently when I look back on it and I think, okay, that was crazy that I can't say I accepted it, but I just tried to ignore it as much as I could because I didn't know what else to do. And then I remember one day I'm in the car, the radio's on, and then a commercial comes on for, do you have a whole list of symptoms? I'm like, I have that symptom, pelvic pain, painful periods, heavy periods. Can't remember what, like a whole bunch of symptoms. Do you have these symptoms? I'm like, oh my God, yes, I have like pretty much all of them. Well, then you may be eligible to participate in a study. And then you may have endometriosis if you'd like to participate in a study. I'm like, and that's what I have. And, you know, and then I start Googling and, you know, there's so much more information now. And even now, nobody really knows exactly what it is and what mm-hmm. comes, you know, what causes it. And, I don't know, there was not a lot. And that, at that point I had a new gynecologist who was a woman, by the way. And I remember saying to her, like, okay, I went to her, right. I was going as a new patient for just a checkup. And, you know, so she's taking my history and she says, you know, ask me about any concerns or whatever. And I said, yes, actually, here's what's been going on for me. And I told her about the pain and the cysts. And I said, and you know, I wonder if I have endometriosis. And she said, well, you know, it's really hard to diagnose endometriosis. The only way to really diagnose it is with surgery. So you don't want to do that. I'm like, no, that sounds kind of crazy. Yeah. Okay. So I guess I won't know. And she said, you know, again, she sent me for more ultrasounds, which showed up cysts. And then she said, you know, if you're really in pain, you can try birth control pills, because that's what I would give you if I knew that you had endometriosis anyway. And I think now is a good time for me to say that birth control pills is a treatment for endometriosis and adenomyosis. It's not a cure. Right. And it sometimes gets presented as a cure, and it's not. It right. just, you know, it just, you know, endometriosis and adenomyosis are driven by estrogen. So if you can, you know, lessen the estrogen, then you can lessen the symptoms. And I do not like hormonal things. I don't like the idea of it. And also, like, every time I've ever done it, I really don't like how I feel. Mm-hmm. So I said, no, I don't want to do it, but I don't even remember what I thought I would try. I said, okay, whatever, I'll, and I think she actually even said to me, well, you know, if you've been dealing with it with so long, then, you know, and nothing terrible is happening, you know, it can't be so bad or something. She was pretty dismissive. And and this is also a thing where, like, why, I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm getting ahead of myself, but I kept on going to her whenever I felt like I was having the pain for too long. Cause most of the time, like I said, I would just know that it was going to pass and it was nothing. It was maybe cysts, maybe not. And they would go away. And I, at one point when I, but you know, like I said, every few, flare-ups, I would just say, okay, maybe I should check this out. And I remember going to her once and telling her, yeah, so it's the pain again. And she looks at me and she goes, you know, there's nothing wrong with you. Why do you keep coming in?
Oh my God.
Like that.
And see, just because you have a female doctor, okay.
Yeah. I really thought like, okay, I'll get more sympathy. I specifically looked for my gynecologist before was male, just because that was the way it worked out. And I liked him, but then he changed practices and whatever. It was time for me to find a new doctor. And I specifically said, I would like a female doctor. And I couldn't believe that, you know, and also every time I would say something about the pain, she would say, well, I told you, you know, you could take the pills. But you don't want to. And I would tell her why I don't want to. And she's like, well, it's your choice. But you know, that's what all my patients do that. And all my patients are happy with it. But if you don't want to, then it's up to you. And she would
your
say,
fault.
Yeah. Like, so that's another thing. It's like, you know, when we accept pain and we also accept being dismissed like that, right, and being talked down to. And when I walked out of her office, out of that appointment, thinking like, okay, I'm done. I need a new doctor. But, you know, finding a new doctor sometimes is really, it's very stressful. And I stuck with her for a while until, did I leave her then? I can't even remember. At some point she literally bullied me into taking the pills. And it took a good, 6 months till like my body even adjusted. Like I had like weird bleeding here and there from it. And every time I would call her, say like, is this normal? She said, yes, you know, like that. You know, there was just a lot of not feeling good about myself and feeling like, am I being a pain? Am I complaining too much? Just like a lot of, they call this medical gaslighting.
Right.
And it just sounds so horrible, because if you're going to a doctor because you have pain or because you have something that you would like to get checked out, I mean, you should never be talked to like that, but especially if you're vulnerable about something right. like that. And
100%.
And it happens just all too often.
And it's not going to be better lately because the time pressure for doctors is such a problem, right? I mean, it takes time to listen more. And people can do it, though. I'm sure doctors are going to be listening, saying, hey, I do this in my few minutes that I have. It can be done.
You know, even if she was limited in the amount of time she could spend with me, right. she could have been a little more empathetic. She didn't have right. to say, oh, why are you here? There's nothing wrong with it. She could have said it something like, you know, I feel so bad. You're in pain and you're looking for answers and you keep coming back. And I'm sorry, I can't help you, which is what other doctors said to me. She just was really obnoxious. And
sorry.
Thank you.
It's awful.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, and it's not like, oh, you're going for a checkup and your doctor is like a little bit annoying and annoyed and you're just like, okay, fine, whatever. Just, I want to make sure that I'm okay. I was going to her because I was not feeling well. And that was not what I needed. So, you know, after being on the pill for a year, I just couldn't, yes, my symptoms did, you know, it did alleviate my symptoms. But I just did not like how I felt in my body. Like I gained weight. I just was uncomfortable in other ways. And I said, you know what? I can't do this. If I know, you know, now I have a better idea that maybe the pain is from endometriosis. So I know that that's not like a dangerous thing. It's just painful. If I, you know, I'll deal with it. I'll deal with it. And I kept on just like saying, okay, I'll deal with it. Deal with it. And then that might have been the thing that sent me to find a new gynecologist, but at some point I had another gynecologist, also female, and she was really, really nice. She was really sympathetic. And when I told her that, you know, I think I have endometriosis and these are my symptoms, and she at least was nice, and she said, yeah, you know, it could be, but unfortunately it's just really a confusing disease. It's really hard to diagnose. You know, let's try and treat your symptoms. And she also sent me for a whole bunch of ultrasounds all the time. And at one point I remember she said, like, I want you to go to get an ultrasound in the hospital, radiology, and I want it. This, I'm going to put in the prescription that I need this particular radiologist to read it because he's really good and we're going to figure this out. And again, it was, you know, cysts on my ovaries, go get a follow up. And meanwhile, my primary care doctor said, you know, we're going to figure this out. She said at one point she thought, you know, maybe it's not like a pelvic issue or a, you know, gynecological issue. Maybe it's like something structural or muscular. She sent me to a pain rehab doctor who sent me for a whole bunch of MRIs, which showed a labral tear in my hip. And most of my pain was on my left side, and it was a tear on my left hip. And so a labral tear is like a tear in the tissue that, you know, because the, you know, for anybody who doesn't know what that is, you know, the hip is like a ball and socket kind of joint. So there needs to be some kind of membrane there to keep it, you know, in between. So that's the labrum or labrium. I don't know. And she said, oh, you know, that could be causing the pain because it's like there, it could be causing pain in that whole area, and sent me for PT, which was helpful for a lot of other things, but like that pain didn't go away. And at this point, you know, like this is, you know, probably over a period of 5 years, maybe more, wow, where, you know, the pain is getting worse, it's getting more constant. And, you know, I don't know how many times later my primary care doctor said, no, we're really going to figure this out. You shouldn't be in pain. We need to figure it out. We need to know what to do. And she sent me for a CAT scan. And in the CAT scan, she said, like, I don't know, something looks weird. Like they're saying something about your bladder, but I don't understand it. It's not my specialty. Go see, or something about my kidneys. I don't even remember exactly what she said. But she said, you know, I know this is not my specialty. I know I can't help you with this, but you should go talk to a urologist. So I'm trying to find a urologist that takes my insurance. Also, I thought I wanted somebody female. I wanted an appointment, you know, closer than 6 months out. And it was really hard to find somebody. And while I'm doing all this research, trying to find somebody, I realized, you know, this is like sort of a gynecological, I think this is gynecological. There has to be a specialty called urogynecology. And I start typing it in, and I'm like, and it comes up. And it comes up. And there is, in fact, a specialty called urogynecology. And, you know, also like nobody mentioned that to me. And so I found somebody. Oh, and in between all of this, I was also getting every GI test. Well, maybe not every GI test, but a lot of GI tests, because, you know, I had some GI symptoms, or it was just, you know, sometimes the, you know, the discomfort, I thought, okay, maybe it's some sort of GI issue. And, you know, my GI was also like so devout, you know, he sent me for everything. Mm-hmm. He was so nice. You know, he also would say, well, maybe it could be that, so check that out. Maybe he also couldn't give me anything definitive. And so, you know, there were some people who were really trying to help me. But so I found this urogynecologist. I asked, I don't remember who, I asked one of my doctors to recommend somebody, and they gave me a whole bunch of names. So from all the people who could see me soon, who took my insurance, who I liked what I saw in their bio, I found somebody and I got an appointment. And she said, she's, you know, did an exam, and she said, does this hurt? Does this hurt? And I told her where it hurt. And she said, you know, it looks like, you know, that's your pelvic floor. Maybe it's your pelvic floor that's causing the pain. And we fixed that with PT, pelvic floor PT. And if that doesn't work, then come back to me and I'll give you some Botox, and we can do Botox injections in your pelvic floor and, you know, help numb it. So I left her office thinking, oh my gosh, I have an answer. Like, I know what's wrong with me and I know what to do about it. And, oh, and she also said, here is a, you know, PSA thing. You know, she wanted to do a cystoscopy, which is a camera in your bladder. She told me, you know, we do it in the office. I give you local, you know, numbing, and it's fine. That is the most painful test that I did. So right. I'm telling anybody, if your doctor wants you to have a cystoscopy, you need anesthesia for that. The whole thing takes 5 minutes, but it is so painful. So, you know, maybe they won't give you anesthesia, or, you know, that's not appropriate for that, but just know that it's not just like a procedure in the office. It really, really hurts. So, you know, thank God my bladder was fine. And I went to, I was trying to find a pelvic floor. It's really important to have a very good pelvic floor physical therapist. It's important that that is their specialty. It is a very specialized thing. And it's hard. It's not always easy to find somebody good that will take insurance, but I have insurance. I want them to pay for it. So I was doing in this practice. And so there was a long wait. So when I finally got in, also that PT was so nice and she was so validating. And I, you know, and she said, yeah, here's what we're going to do. And she said, yeah, I can help you with this. And she gave me stretches and exercises and, you know, she did like some manual things and I thought, okay. And, you know, and I told her, when I gave her my whole history, I said, yeah, so I think I have endometriosis. You know, that was how I started my new patient visit with so many people. So I think I have endometriosis and here are my symptoms. And she said, yeah, it sounds like you could. And then I don't know if it like my second or third visit, she hands me a piece of paper. She said, here, we have a new women's health department here, women pelvic, I don't remember what she said, but we have a new doctor here in the women's health department who specializes in endometriosis. You should go see her. So I said, oh, wow. I don't know how I was able to get an appointment so quickly with her, because now it would take, I don't know, it's so hard to get appointment. You know, you can make appointments with specialists or even just, you know, in primary care doctors, and it could sometimes take 3 months or longer.
Right, because she was new, that's why.
Yeah, yeah, that's mm-hmm. probably why. So I met her and she, I have to say, I did not love her, which really upset me. I felt like she was a little bit cold, but she listened to me. And then she said, you know, and here's the thing. Everybody would ask me, is there a pattern to your pain? Do you notice it? Like what time in your cycle does it hurt most? Or when do you, you know, and there was no pattern. There was no pattern to my pain, which made me feel like I was giving the wrong answer most of the time. And I know that that was on me, but still, like you get to this point where you just like start doubting yourself.
Right.
So she said, you know, endometriosis, and I don't even know if this is true, but she said endometriosis is more, you know, in tune with your cycle. It sounds like from your symptoms, it sounds like you have adenomyosis. And I had never heard that word before. She said, but the good thing about adenomyosis is that we can see it in imaging. So she sent me for an MRI, which did in fact find the adenomyosis.
I just want to interrupt you for just a second because I researched this before our talk.
Yeah.
And that there's a lot of, there's more ability to find it on sonogram. Mm-hmm. And even though MRI is more accurate, it's more sensitive and specific than sonogram. Sonograms are cheaper and easier to get, and mm-hmm. they can often be a way to diagnose it. I'm just throwing it out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And often insurance, because I had this recently, insurance will have you do an ultrasound before they'll authorize mm-hmm. You know, an MRI or a CAT scan.
Right.
So, but she sent me for an MRI. You know, this was like, I don't know, maybe 2.5 years ago. I really think in the last 2.5 years, things really have progressed mm-hmm. because I've since had ultrasounds where they saw it and right. I hadn't. And I'd had ultrasound like, I don't know, close to that time. I mean, maybe they didn't know what they were. Maybe they exactly. need to know.
They have to know what they're looking for. It's operator dependent, et cetera.
Yeah, right. So, but still, I would think if a patient comes with pelvic pain, you're going to look for adenomyosis. I don't know why.
Well, you'd have to know to look for.
Right, right.
It's still poorly. We're making progress, but it's not on the top of people's radar, doctor's radar.
Yeah. Yeah, it's really, but the good thing is that there is progress. I've seen the difference mm-hmm. and I'll say that during this time, I found a chat, you know, from this page on Instagram where, she said, you know, if this is not my thing, but women are asking me about endometriosis, you know, somebody wants to start a chat, let me know if you want to be on this chat, message me, which I did. And I found this group and it was so great. It really was. Everybody was telling, there were, I don't even know how many of us there were in the beginning. There were like maybe 6 or 7 of us. And some people had diagnoses, some people hadn't yet, but it was just, you know, people had information. We could share information. We could give each other empathy. It was real. And I was learning from it, but I hadn't heard of adenomyosis then.
I just want to stop you just a minute. This is a WhatsApp support group, right?
Yeah.
How many people are in it now?
Maybe 10 or fewer.
Okay. So it's not a huge group.
No, it's
because there is no other from support group for people with endo or adeno, as far as you know, correct?
As far as I know, no.
So no. I think it would be fair to say at this point that if people want to, they could reach out to me at health, health at joma.org, and I could connect to the person who's in charge, who's the admin of that WhatsApp group. So people can join that if they hear this, because I want to offer something and there really is nothing else.
There might be, and I just don't know, but, people should ask you and, you know, you could direct them, I guess, because it really is helpful.
Right. I'm a huge believer in support groups.
Yeah. Yeah. It's great to have validation. It's great to have support. There's, you know, an exchange of information there, and it's just so, especially in a, when you're dealing with something that so few people understand or know about, you know, and people have, you know, and here's another thing that I went through when I joined this group is that I, you know, some of these women had really terrible situations. And at some point I thought, okay, maybe I don't belong here. Why am I feeling sorry for myself? Why am I, you know, like I'm not, you know, what I'm going through is nothing compared to what other people are going through. You know, and that's not fair to do that, because my suffering was my suffering, you know.
Right. It's kind of a form of imposter syndrome.
Yeah. In a twisted way.
Right. I'm not suffering enough.
Yeah. No. Yeah. Like, oh, my endo isn't bad enough. I don't know if I have it. You know, I had a follow-up appointment with the doctor, and she said, okay, she explained to me what it was. And it's, you know, when cells that are like the lining of the uterus are grow into the muscle of the uterus. And she said, you know, there actually is a way to cure that. You know, hysterectomy will take out your uterus and it will take out the disease. And that's that. And she said, you know, and I must really like look surprised. She said, you know, but we keep your ovaries. So you'll still have the estrogen, you'll still have hormones that, you know, you won't go into menopause. And she said, oh, and very, you know, the thinking is that when women go into menopause, all of these symptoms stop. The endo and the adeno stop because they're not being fed estrogen so much. So she said, you know, you could wait until menopause, you could do a hysterectomy, you can have a hormonal IUD, you could, there was some nerve thing that she could try. I think like some sort of nerve ablation thing. I don't even remember, because when she told it to me, I said, I'm not doing that. And she also said, you know, it's not always effective. So I sort of dismissed it, and I don't even really remember what it was. But I just felt so validated, so like vindicated.
Finally, right? How many years was this?
Probably about 7 years at that point.
Wow.
Yeah. Yeah. And it, you know, like I said, it had been steadily getting more painful and the flare-ups more often. So but all those options that she gave me, none of that sounded attractive to me. None of that sounded like anything I wanted to do. So I was still a little bit confused, but I felt like, okay, I had someone, I finally knew what was wrong with me. I had someone who, you know, talked to somebody who knew what she was talking about. And I felt like, if I know what it's from, I can handle the pain. Let me find ways to manage the pain. So I continued with the PT. My PT was pretty, you know, into holistic kind of things. So she recommended craniosacral therapy and acupuncture. And at some point I found like an integrative medicine doctor, and I thought, you know, I'll try to modify my diet, you know, be anti-inflammatory. And the PT was really good. Like, there were times when I would go into PT in a lot of pain, and she would do whatever she did, and I would walk out of there like a normal person walking. But it never, you know, I'd go, I think, once a week, and it never really lasted for more than a few days. And then I would have these flare-ups, and then it was time for me to go to my regular gynecologist for a checkup. And I told her, guess what? I have a diagnosis. I know now that I have adenomyosis. And she was really nice. She was the one who kept on saying, okay, we're going to figure it out. We're going to, you know, she was just so nice to me. And she says, well, you know, adenomyosis is a pretty murky diagnosis. You know, that. And I like, what? But it's like, I think it's so specific. What do you mean? I remember she used the word murky, and I still don't even know what she meant by that.
Because it's not being directly diagnosed until you take the uterus out and look at it under a microscope.
Right, right. Yeah. So I don't know. Like, I didn't know what to make of that. And I just thought, okay, but at least I know what it is, and I'm trying to manage it. And, you know, if I really can't handle it, I know that there's always the hormonal treatment if I want to. At that point, I'm like, no, I'm not doing a hysterectomy. You know, but I'll keep doing the pelvic PT. I'll try acupuncture. Oh no, I hadn't tried acupuncture yet. I was doing craniosacral therapy and PT, and the craniosacral therapy did not help for my pain, mm-hmm. but it just kind of made me a little more zen. Mm-hmm. So I was able to handle the pain more, except for when there was a flare up. It was, you know, the flare ups were really hard. Mm-hmm. And trying to think, that was okay. So then the next big thing that happened was that I decided I wanted to do the diagnostic laparoscopy. I said, I need some answers. I know that I have adenomyosis and I'm not ready to take out my uterus, but I would like to check inside and see if I have endometriosis. Because if I have endometriosis, then that can be taken out and maybe that will give me some relief. So, oh my gosh, this was so hard. I remember I had a telehealth appointment with this doctor, you know, the one who diagnosed it. And she said, yeah, that sounds reasonable. I said, you know, my pain is getting worse. My flare-ups are becoming more often. I was having GI symptoms, like bladder symptoms, you know. So thankfully I had a urogynecologist at that point, because I was going there pretty often to thinking I had a UTI. And at some point, you know, she said, like, yeah, you have to, you know, that's not the problem.
And I'm sorry, you mean, just to clarify, you mean that you're having GI and urinary symptoms is probably more from the endometriosis than the adenomyosis?
Well, from either. Mm-hmm. And you know, what the endometriosis doctor said to me, and now I know she wasn't really an endometriosis doctor. She was just, a gynecologist who specialized in minimally invasive surgery, who also does endometriosis surgery. Mm. That's not her specialty, which I have learned is what you need when you're going to do endometriosis surgery. You need an endometriosis surgeon, like that is their specialty. So I had this appointment with her, and she said, yeah, it makes sense that you would want to know. But she also said that, you know, the uterus, the bowel, and the bladder all share nerves. So even if there is no endo on my bowel or my bladder, it makes sense that it would hurt because my uterus and also the uterus touch, you know, all the organs touch each other.
Right, right.
But she said, yeah, that makes sense that you want to know. So, you know, somebody in my office will contact you, we'll schedule surgery. And nobody was contacting me. And like about 2 weeks later, I think I called her office. And then, I don't know, we're going back and forth until finally somebody from her office called me and said, oh, she wants to schedule a telehealth appointment with you. I said, huh? Yeah, to discuss surgery. I'm like, huh? So we had this telehealth appointment and she said, oh my gosh. She said, I don't know what happened. I know we had an appointment a few weeks ago, but I didn't save my notes and I don't know what we discussed.
What?
Can you tell me? Yeah. So, yeah. Oh my God. And, you know, and there was a copay for this too on mine. But the worst part of it was that I told her what we discussed and what we decided. And she said, yeah, I don't know if that's really such a good idea. You know, I don't know, maybe for someone your age, I'm going to have a hard time making a case for this. I don't know. Why don't you just come in? I'll give you a hormonal IUD. Like she just did a total flip.
Right. You know, fair though, because again, I mean, this is your end of the story, right? I mean, to be fair, she may have been thinking this is not going to be beneficial and why should she go through this? No?
That probably is what she was thinking. I don't know
why. She could have said it more clearly, right?
You know, she just made it sound like she had attitude again. Like, why are you wasting my time? I could very easily, you could come in and in 10 minutes, I could give you an IUD and you can walk out of there with the hormones directly in your uterus and you'll be fine. Why do we have to do that? You know, like that was kind of like her attitude. And I remember like hanging from that call thinking like, oh my God, like I'm losing my mind. Like I must be crazy. Anyway, I had the surgery and she did not find, you know, she took a bunch of biopsies. I like for, you know, diagnostic laparoscopy, I wasn't going to do a hysterectomy. I figured I'll deal with the adenomyosis. I want to know if I have endometriosis and if I have endometriosis, I want it out. So we did the laparoscopy and hysteroscopy and with the DNC and she, you know, the biopsies showed no endo, you know, we're negative for endo. And I don't know. I felt like, okay, at least I know, but like, I don't know. It just sounded weird to me because I don't know. From what I learned is that most of the time, if a woman has adenomyosis, there's endo there too. Not necessarily the other way around, but if there's not everybody with endo also has adeno, but if you have adeno, most likely there's endo too. And I just thought, okay, fine. You know, now I know. And now I have to figure out what to do with this information. I know what to do. And I'm going to continue trying to manage my pain. And that was really almost like a full-time job at that point. You know, also because I was, you know, just learning about it, you know, learning so much, learning so many things. And honestly, I don't know what I would have done without that group, you know, my WhatsApp group, because, you know, everybody was validating, everybody was supportive, also learning information. And, you know, and at some point also I think I had stopped with it. Oh, no, I was still doing PT. I had a different physical therapist at that point in the same practice, but she had left, there was someone else. And so she's actually one of the people who said to me, you know, I think you probably have endo also, because most women who have adeno have endo too. And after that surgery, for a while, I felt pretty good. And I thought, okay, you know, maybe the DNC, you know, because there was some inflammation in my endometrium. So I thought, okay, maybe that was like, you know, making it hurt more. And she cleared that up. And for a few months, I was really feeling good. And I was happy I did it. And now I felt like I had answers. And then, I don't know, it just started to hurt again. And I did a whole bunch of other things. I tried lidocaine injections in my pelvic floor. I kept up with pelvic floor therapy, craniosacral therapy. I started acupuncture. And all, you know, those, you know, holistic, things really, really just kind of helped calm me down. They didn't really do anything with the pain, but they calmed me down. So I would recommend them. I would say that, you know, this is a really difficult thing to go to. And if anybody, you know, wants some, I wouldn't say pain relief, but just like some sort of like, I don't even know what the word is, you know, I think it's helpful just in deal to help you deal with it. Mm. You know, I did whatever. Yeah, I started yoga. I felt like that was helpful to me, not for the pain, but it helped me see all the strong things that my body could do. You know, you have to figure out what's going to do it for you. Mm. That's what I found. That's what I learned. That's what I want to pass on. And my PT kept on saying, you know, I would go back to her in pain. She would fix me up a little bit, give me some relief, and I would be in pain. And she kept telling me, you know, there's this doctor, he does this, which I knew about him. He's an endometriosis surgeon, and he does these free phone consult, you know, video telehealth consultations. You send him all your, you know, imaging and all your notes, and he'll tell you what to do. And I just was really not, like, I wanted to do it, but I thought, oh, I have to find everything. I know what's wrong with me. And then at some point I just, like, I did it. And I met with him, and he said, yeah, you know, looks like, oh no, sorry. Before that, somebody on the group mentioned how she had nerve blocks that really helped her. And she recommended the doctor she went to. And I mean, it got an appointment with her. And I also Googled her, and I found, oh, she has a podcast. So I was listening to her podcast, and she did an episode with an endometriosis surgeon. And I said, and she's in NYU. And I said, okay, great. Going to make an appointment with her. And before I got to see her, I had to see her NP who ordered the imaging. So first, she wanted me to get an MRI, but my insurance made me do an ultrasound before that. And like, I literally had PTSD because I had been in, you know, in all the practices that I've been to, like, we're in different hospitals, and I had not been in that place in NYU for an ultrasound in years. And it all came, like, I remember being there crying, thinking, oh my gosh, all these years that I did ultrasounds in this room.
Oh, wow.
And like, I'm back here again. And it was very, very painful. You know, vaginal ultrasound is very painful when you have, you know, things that cause that kind of pain poking around my uterus. And the ultrasound, they were able to see the adenomyosis, and also areas where they suspected there might be endo.
Yeah.
And
it's not common to miss that on the hysteroscopy, though.
Oh, the hysteroscopy is not going to show endo anyway.
No, the endometriosis I'm back to. I'm sorry. I'm stuck on the endometriosis.
Yeah. Well, I knew when I had the hysteroscopy, I knew about the endometriosis anyway, the adenomyosis.
Right. You know, you were told there was no endo.
I was told there was no endo. But this ultrasound showed endo, and then I followed up with the MRI, which showed endo, adeno. I mean, you know, suspected, because you can't definitively diagnose it from the imaging. And this surgeon wouldn't see me because she didn't see women my age. I was above her age cap, which I thought was really obnoxious also. And I had to see her associate. And I thought, okay, you know, and the NP says, no, I work for him too. And he's really good. And she handpicked him. So I thought, okay, fine. I'll go see him. And he was so nice. And he spent so much time talking to us. But I left that office and I thought, you know what? He had me looking at his computer, and I thought he was going to show me things on my own imaging. And he was pulling up pictures from Google to show me what adenomyosis was. I'm like, I know what adenomyosis is. Right. I would like to see my own adenomyosis if you think it would be helpful. And he said, you know, and if we do a history, you know, if you know, as you know, the definitive cure for this is a hysterectomy. And of course, and I said, yeah, but you would leave my ovaries, right? And he said, no, I would take your ovaries out. That's what we do now, because endo is fed by estrogen, and your ovaries will keep producing estrogen, and so we have to take them out, or the endo will come back. I don't know, that just didn't sit right with me, because I was told, like, you know, even women in menopause who have hysterectomies, they leave their ovaries because there's always a little bit of estrogen that's good for bone health, for heart health, just, you know, keeping your hormones steady if you have it. They're, you know, doing what it's supposed, there's a reason that they're there, you know, unless there's a reason to take them out. But adenomyosis is not a reason to take out ovaries. And I will also say that a lot of people think that a hysterectomy is a cure for endometriosis, and it is not. So if anybody does not have adenomyosis, they have endometriosis and they were told to have hysterectomy, that is wrong. That is absolutely wrong. So that's something that people should know. And that also there's no reason to take out ovaries unless there's a reason to take out ovaries. So I left that office thinking, like, I just don't know what to do. And I decided to have that telehealth appointment with the endometriosis, the other one who does, and he doesn't take insurance. It, you know, it just seemed like a big deal, but he'll do this consult for free. So I had the phone appointment with him and he said, yeah, I see that, you know, it looks like, you know, the endo is there and the adeno is there. And then, you know, and he said, you know, I could really tell a lot more if he came to my office and I could do an ultrasound. And I don't know. I just said, you know what? I came, like, I've been doing all this time. I'm just going to go see him, which I did. And he was so nice, which also, like, it, you know, it's sad that we have, when a doctor is nice to us, it's sad that we, that that stands out, you know. He was just so, in his whole office was just like so nice and empathetic and kind. And
he, it makes a huge difference.
It really does. It really does. Because, you know, like I said, you're going to these people, these specialists, because you have a situation that is not okay. And, you know, that's what you need. So he.
For sure. I mean, it's basic, but you have to say it. Because you didn't get it a lot of the time.
Yeah. You know, there's a book, you know, we kind of discussed this book, Beating Endo, which is really, I recommend it for people who have endo or adeno and you want to learn. Well, there's not so much about adeno, but a lot of the things apply.
By Iris.
Iris Orbach and Amy Stern. It's written by, I think, Amy Stern. I think that's her lot.
Amy Stein, yeah.
Amy Stein, right? Thanks. She's a PT, a pelvic floor PT, and Dr. Iris Arbuck is a she's an endometriosis surgeon. So
who
they
herself has endometriosis.
Yeah, she just recently, if you on her Instagram, she, like, I don't know, 2 weeks ago, just said, like, oh hey, by the way, I have endometriosis. Here's my story, which was like, what, did I miss something?
She also said that she got diagnosed because of her daughter, because she said, hey, this is genetic.
Yeah, it does tend to run in families, they say. Although I don't know any other women in my family who have it. But and she said it took her 17 years to get diagnosed.
And she's a doctor.
And she's a doctor.
A specialist in the field.
Yeah. And she said that, like, she never, like, she always thought that there were problems, but she never, she also, like, oh yeah, okay, whatever, it's fine, it's fine. You know, like we said in the beginning, like, you know, no, it's not fine. And she just didn't look further into it until her daughter was sick. So this book is, it's full of a lot of really good information. There's a lot in there. She talks a lot about preparing your body, you know, giving your body the best chance for recovery. You know, she's a surgeon, so she talks about what to do to prepare, you know, to take care of it, and how to prepare for surgery and how to get the best chances for best outcome of surgery and the best recovery. And she talks about taking care of your mind and your body, you know, with diet, exercise, meditation, you know, alleviating stress, which are really all good things, but a lot of it is hard to do on a regular basis. So I think, you know, reading that book should be done with, you know, knowing what you can and can't do, you know, like, just, which is part of the whole thing, is to know yourself.
Right. It's an idea book, not a rule book.
Right. Right. You know, and but pelvic floor PT, I think that is essential. I do. I would say that.
I'm going to have to link to our talk with, my talk with the pelvic floor PT as well. Yeah, it's really important. She talks a lot about diet being anti-inflammatory. I don't know how evidence-based this is. Yes, there's inflammation that leads to the pain, but I'm not really sure that all the things that she talks about, like I heard her talk on a podcast and she was talking about how it was important to go gluten-free and bio-organic And these are the kind of things that made me as an autism mom crazy. It's the same kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And I think you have to, like you said, pick and choose what works for you and not let anybody guilt you into mm-hmm. doing stuff, right? Whether it's right. a doctor telling you what you can and can't do, all right, or dismissing or not dismissing, or an alternative approach, right? Take from it from what works with you, for you.
Right. I think it's good for like learning, you know, learn about it. See like, oh, okay, I didn't know that. And then, you know, do your own research or try things out for yourself. But also know that it's so unrealistic to follow everything there, you know, right. to the key. You know, definitely there's a benefit to, you know, calming your body, you know, like, you know, meditation. Cause right. I found myself that my pain would flare up more when I was stressed or, mm-hmm. you know, there was stuff going on and it would hurt a lot more. Mm-hmm. You know, so the idea behind meditation and yoga is that it puts your body in a more, you know, that the state of your body, you know, normally is more at peace. And if you ever feel stressed, you can more easily and more quickly get into that state. So, you know, I think that's great for everybody. Mm-hmm. And especially if you have like, you know, a chronic pain condition, it, you know, that can only help. You know, exercise, of course, is always good for that. You know, and eating well, yeah, that's also important too, but like not, I don't think it's realistic to only eat organic. I don't think it's right. realistic. I don't think for everybody, it's necessarily even beneficial to go gluten-free. I tried it, didn't help me.
Right. If it doesn't work for you, then it doesn't work. End of story. Different people are different.
Right, right. So it's important to know that. But she said what she does with her patients is when they're going to sleep on the operating table, she holds their hand and says, think of a happy memory or your happy place. I can't remember exactly which. And I read that. I'm like, wow. So it is important to have somebody who cares right. and, you know, wants you to do well. Anyway, so I met with that endometriosis surgeon and had such a great appointment with him. And he gave me all the information and everything about my situation. And he said, you know, and ultimately it's up to you. Mm-hmm. He said, you know, you know, what it came down to was a quality of life decision, really. Mm-hmm. And you know, there were people on the chat who had, and he said, if you decide to have a hysterectomy, we will keep your ovaries because you need your ovaries and your ovaries are not a problem. Mm-hmm. One of my ovaries may have had endo on it. He said, we'll see what we can do about it, but for sure the other ovary stays. And I really thought about it. I really didn't know what to do. I was at that point in like probably almost constant pain. Mm-hmm. And you know, on the chat, there were a couple of women who had had hysterectomies. And, you know, when we would talk about it, I said something like, you know, earlier when I said, you know, that sounds really drastic to me. I don't know if I'm ready to do that. They all said, when it's time for you to do a hysterectomy, you will know, mm-hmm. you know, you'll just, they said, you know, we didn't think, make this decision right away, but it came to a point where we just said, yeah, it has to come out. And, you know, they feel the improvement since then. So, you know, I had individual conversations with them. I did my research on that and it got to a point where it was just really affecting me so badly. And I said, okay, I'm going to do the surgery. I'm just going to do it. And I scheduled the surgery. And then I said, okay, I have time. It was, you know, more than a month away. I said, I have time to chicken out of it. I have time to do some more research. and like up until the day of, oh, and there were things where, you know, right from then I knew that this first surgeon who did my first surgery was not an endometriosis specialist. I could tell the difference right away. An important thing for people to know is that surgery for endo needs to be excision surgery. If you are looking into this and you're looking for a surgeon, you need to make sure that the surgeon does excision surgery where they actually cut out the endo from the bottom and take it out of your body. The other procedure that they do is ablation where they kind of just, you know, burn it off on the surface and it almost all, not almost, I think it always grows back. Mm-hmm. And, you know, different people have different, you know, that's probably more like an insurance thing. And, you know, also it's important to know that the surgeon that you go to is an endometriosis specialist, not a gynecologist, you know, a gynecological surgeon who has experience with endo. It's not the same thing. It's just not. And I learned that myself because I had the surgery and the biopsies showed endo. And
so this
I don't
is the endo surgery that you're having, not the hysterectomy.
No, well, the second surgery, which was endo excision and hysterectomy.
Okay, had the same time. Okay.
I had the same time. And you know, I don't know. It's a crazy thing to be happy that, you know, like you have this disease, but I just felt so validated. Mm-hmm. I can't say happy, that's too strong of a word, but, you know, just being handed off, you know, by different doctors or dismissed or blown off was just such a horrible experience.
Right.
And knowing, you know, learning along the way is so important. And, you know, when it was time for me to do the surgery, I knew it was time to do the surgery. You know, like I wrote a note in my phone when we decided to do this, and I have like this whole list of things, and I tried to put it in chronological order, and I'm like, okay, it would get too, well, this maybe is boring anyway, but there was just so much there that I'm like, oh my God, like I went through all of that.
Yeah, it's really an odyssey.
Yeah, it was an odyssey. It really was. And I hope, you know, I'm at the end of it. And I don't know why it has to be so hard to find people who know what they're doing or who will listen to you. You know, even my primary care doctor, who really didn't know what was wrong with me and she didn't know how to help me, just knowing that she cared to help me find out was right. Worth so much.
Right.
And even the gynecologist who didn't know how to help me, but cared and was empathetic, also that helped so much. You know, ultimately it was, you know, also I'm telling this story because it was just a string of things, string of events and string of some, you know, accidents even that led me to the people that ultimately led me to the people that led me to find the right people. And, you know, sometimes you have to go through it that way.
Take a shit off. But,
yeah.
Right. It sounds like that. That's the same kind of story. So how long ago was the surgery?
About 2 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, I feel better. I do. I mean,
thank God.
Thank God. It. I mean, I still have a little pain. Mm-hmm. You know, they say it's a good like 6 months for like a full recovery.
Mm-hmm. No, it's a major, major surgery.
Yeah. Yeah. But I'm happy I did it. I really am. You know, I was really, really nervous. And even, you know, the day of the surgery, I remember talking to the surgeon and saying like, okay, well, if you find endo, then can you just take out the endo and leave my uterus? And they said, you know, we want to give you the best outcome. And that's not going to be that. But you
knew you had endo. You knew you had significant endo. That was the main part of your problem, right?
The main part of my problem was probably the adeno, but there was also endo.
Right. No, I know.
And that's why I'm thinking now. So what if with the originals, the surgeon who diagnosed the adeno, I'm thinking like, okay, so what if when she had said to me, okay, here's what we do. And, you know, we can do a hysterectomy. And she said, you know, the only function of the uterus is to grow a baby. So if you're not having babies anymore, you really don't need your uterus. Like there's no hormone function. There's nothing that you need your uterus for other than that. You know, which was reassuring because it's not like, you know, removing like a kidney or something that, mm-hmm. you know, you need. But I'm thinking now, what if I had said, okay, fine. You know what? I'm finished having kids. Let's take it out and I'll feel better. She would have left all the endo in there.
Right.
And that really scares me when I think about it. So, you know, it was, I guess it was good that I wasn't ready then.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how she missed the endo. That was,
well, that a was small there. Percent, a small percent can be missed on hysteroscopy.
No. This was a laparoscopic surgery that she missed it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and she was looking at it's not just hysteroscopy.
Yeah, no, she did hysteroscopy because, I don't know, there was like inflammation in my endometrium. But the main surgery was the laparoscopy, you know, mm-hmm. to look for endo. And she didn't see it.
But I still think that there's going to be a small percent that are missed.
I think that
not
by skilled...
It's not 100%.
You know, nothing is 100%. Right. But I think that if this is not your specialty that you do all day, every day... Mm-hmm. You're not necessarily knowing what to look for or where to look or how to look for it.
Right. Which you're not confident that she just could have seen it if she knew better.
Yeah. You know, sometimes they're very small lesions and you don't see them. I know that endometriosis lesions look different sometimes, you know, like different ones look different. So you might think, oh, that's not a lesion. That's not endo. Let's just leave that. I've learned that, you know, you have to move the organs around because they could be, you know, it could be on the other side of the organ that you're not looking at. Mm-hmm. I also know that what I learned is that you need a team. You need an endometriosis surgeon who has a team. I mean, I was lucky. I didn't have endo on my bowel, but many women do. And then they need a bowel surgeon to be mm-hmm. there for that too. You know, sometimes. And that a good endo surgeon does the surgery with a team. She was on her own.
You knew the difference the second time around. That's the bottom line.
I knew that, you know what? And here's another sad thing is that I did not love her. I mentioned that. The first time I met her, I thought she was cold. And then all the times that I met with her between then and the surgery, she was hot or cold. There were times where she was so nice and sweet and caring. And then other times where she was cold and dismissive. And I didn't feel good about her. But I said, no, I know that she's, you know, she has good reviews. I know that people recommended her. The hospital hired her to head this department. I know that she's, you know, I know that she's skilled. I don't have to like her. It's sad. But, you know, I'll, you know, she takes my insurance. I was able to schedule surgery pretty quickly. And like now that I know more than I, you know, what I know now, I think like, you know, and there were women on my group who said, yeah, she doesn't sound so good. Are you sure she's a specialist? Like, I don't mean to doubt you, you know, if you trust her, then good, you trust her. But I, you know, you need to know that she's a specialist. You need to know that she does this. You know, do you feel confident in that? And, you know, again, being supportive, apologizing, not wanting to, you know, make me feel bad or question it or doubt it. But she said, like, I want, you know, this friend, she said, I want you to have the best because you need to do this right. You know, are you sure? And I remember when I spoke to her afterwards, you know, talking about, you know, asking about her experience with her hysterectomy, she said, I really didn't have a good feeling about that surgeon.
Which one are you talking about then?
The first one.
Oh, okay. The first one.
Mm-hmm.
The one who missed the...
The one who missed the endo.
Endo, right.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And it boils down to, you know, listening to your gut.
It boils down to listening to your gut. You know, although at a certain point, you know, sometimes you're just wrong, which was at, you know, after that surgery that didn't show the endo, I thought, okay, I know I have endo. I guess that's the reason for my pain. And I know I'll just have to, you know, I guess I was wrong. I guess I was a little bit obsessed with this endo idea. I don't know.
It's hard to trust yourself over all those specials and all those years.
Right. So, you know, my message is, yes, trust yourself.
Mm-hmm.
But also find people that like work with people that you trust. If you don't feel good about a doctor, you don't have to stay with them and you can find somebody else.
That's what I meant by trust your gut. I meant trust your gut that when you're with someone and you're like, I'm not connecting. They're hot, they're cold, they're, you know, they're not listening to me, they're dismissing me, whatever. Trust yourself. Mm-hmm. It's easy to say when you don't have a lot of choices. It's a different story.
Well, and that's the sad thing is that there aren't a lot of choices. And when you go through like an odyssey like this, you really feel hopeless and you find somebody who kind of knows what they're talking about or does know what they're talking about, but is not giving you everything that you need. you say, okay, it's okay, I'll make do.
You downscale. That's called downscaling.
Yeah. You know, and sometimes you have to, because, you know, I mean, there are some excellent surgeons who just don't have, or excellent doctors who don't have, you know, good bedside manner. It happens. It's sad and it shouldn't be that way, but it happens.
Well, they might not have good bedside manner. They might be an excellent surgeon who knows exactly what they're doing. And I'll pick that over bedside manner when it comes to a surgeon.
Mm-hmm.
But not if they not only don't have the bedside manner, but they don't have adequate expertise, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I don't know. You know, the surgeon who did, you know, my, you know, most recent surgery, you know, when I mentioned this doctor to him, he said, oh yeah, we know her. She's good. But I think she's not, she, at that point, she probably wasn't so experienced. And I think that that's what it was.
Right.
But also that's not her specialty.
Right.
She does it, but it's not her specialty. So, you know, you can follow all of these pages on Instagram, and there's a Facebook group called Nancy's Nook where I think it started with this woman. She had endo and she couldn't find care. And so she started this Facebook group with, you know, give out resources, and they vet certain doctors. I'm not sure exactly. I just felt like it would be too much of a rabbit hole for me, so I never looked at it.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, women get so much information from it. And so that's a good resource too, you know, and for networking.
Right. I mean, I think it could be helpful to ask other people who've been through it, who did you go to, what were your experiences, rather than just read reviews on Google.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, this is like Nancy's Nook is a known, page.
No, I'm saying that's good, as opposed to you just going on Health Grades or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Because other people will say, hey, this is the top doctor, or if you can get this one, you know, they'll give you their own experiences, not just some random reviews on these websites.
Yes, and most, you know, so on this, what they will say is make sure that they do excision surgery, not ablation, and make sure that this is their specialty, not just like, oh yeah, they do surgery and they also do endometriosis, you know? So like I said, you know, there are pages on Instagram, you know, women who became activists and also doctors who do this. And that is really the biggest message, is that it has to be their specialty, because it's such a specific disease that it really needs to, it needs attention that way.
Right. And you are your own best advocate, and have trust in yourself, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Those are good take home messages too.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're not, you know, and pain is not okay, you know, right.
And that struck me from the very beginning of your story.
Yeah.
Right. But if a doctor is telling you, oh, everything's fine, this is normal, right, you can not necessarily trust yourself. You might think, well, I should suck it up and, like you said, white knuckle it.
Yeah. And also, I think it's important to not do anything until you're ready, because I wasn't ready to do that surgery right away. I wasn't ready to do any surgery right away.
Right.
And then I thought, okay, I can handle a surgery where, you know, we can see if I have endo and take out the endo, but I'd like to keep all my organs. And I don't regret it that I did it that way.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I think, you know, obviously everything works out the way it's supposed to work out, but you know, I had to get to the point where I was ready to do it. And it also taught me that, you know, it led me to the right place ultimately. And yeah, there's, I don't know. It's a crazy thing. It's just a crazy thing that, you know, there's this disease that people don't know about and don't know how to get help for it and don't know how to, you know, it's really hard to find support for it. And it's just, you know, my stories of the doctors who were dismissive and condescending, I'm not the only one.
Right.
You know, every woman has had that, and every one of us has had countless tests. And, you know, when there were so many things, we're like, oh, I have a labral tear. Great. Now I know what it is. You know, all of us had like, okay, now we know what it is. But then that's not, and, you know, and you treat that thing, it doesn't get better.
Yeah.
And then you start, feel like you're starting all over again, which is very discouraging.
Right. And also, like you said to me when we were talking before about how you have GI symptoms, you can have urological symptoms, you can go to that specialist, and they're just looking at that one organ.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's why, you know, in the book Beating Endo, she says, you know, it would be so great for all specialists, like especially GI specialists, to know about endo, because if you have a patient, you have a, you know, a female patient who has GI symptoms that check out, you know, every test checks out, then, you know, think it could be something else. And, you know, you should know about endo because that's something to check out for it.
And it's common.
It really is. I mean, even when I was like going into the OR, talking to the OR nurse, and she's like, oh, I'll probably be in your, I'll probably be here in a few years. I have endo too.
Right. No, it's supposed to be, I think, up to 1 in 10 women.
Yeah, that's what they say.
So that's really common. That's 10%. It's up to 10%. That's common.
And they also say it takes like, I think, 8 to 10 years, 8 to 12 years, something like that, to get a diagnosis.
Right. And for adeno as well. It's so frustrating. It's so frustrating. But I think that as more and more endo warriors, they call them endo warriors, are out there, and as more and more people are out there, you know, making noise and talking about it, and you're doing your part, right? I mean, this is so helpful. Like in the firm world, there really is so little out there. So I think it's really helpful to get it, you know, from a firm woman to other firm women. It's really, really valuable.
Yeah, I was talking to, you know, a friend in this group, and she said she thinks college teachers should be told about this. This should be part of college teacher training also.
You know, it's interesting you say that, though, because when I spoke with, I think it was with Dr. Yonder, if I was talking about, could it be more preventative? And I'm not sure, you know, you have the problem of being too proactive and just scaring people, right? I think that doctors should be aware of it. I don't know if every person has to be aware of it before they have any symptoms of it. No?
Yeah, I mean, you can't be preventative because if you don't know what causes it, you can't prevent it. But proactive, I think just letting people know that, you know, periods that are painful enough to make you pass out are not normal.
Right.
Right. Periods that make you anemic are not normal. I've had that.
Right.
Periods that, you know, pain that knocks you out for, you know, 2 or 3 days on a regular basis, it's not normal. And also that there's so much misinformation, because, you know, a few gynecologists said to me, like, okay, well, there's no pattern there in your pain, so like, it can't be that. There is no pattern. All of the pain, and every woman has slightly different symptoms.
Right.
And, you know, to be aware of that. And to also be aware that like so many different things, you know, Dr. Arbuck says that, you know, you can have pain in so many different ways because your nervous system is on high alert, you know, right. So everything will fire off a pain response.
Right. I've talked about a number of times, even in the talk with Dr. Yonder, we talked about pelvic pain and the chronic pain response.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about that. But it's such a simple thing. It sounds like such a simple thing, which is to listen to the patient and validate them. If everybody would, if your doctors had done that, right, you would have been in a different place.
Well, you know what? Some of them actually did validate me. They just really didn't know what to do for me.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. That I do think that that's changing, though.
Right.
I do.
Right. But I think what was harder was when people didn't validate you and told you, okay, everything's normal, and, you know, why are you here again?
That was, I still can't believe that she said that. Oh, and another thing that was told to me as an option for management is, she talked about it. Dr. Yandorf talked about it, and now I can't remember. It's like, you know, a whole bunch of letters, like agonists. It's something to like,
yeah.
You know, the medication there, there's either a shot that can, you know, injections or an oral medication.
One that's actually an antagonist instead of an agonist. One or the other, I can't remember either.
Yeah, no, there are two, There are two. There's mm-hmm. there, you can either do it with injections or orally, right. and it, right. it brings on menopause. And I know that sometimes it's necessary to do it. I know people do it for fertility things also. Well, I'll get back to that in a second. But there are a lot of, you know, side effects that are unpleasant. You know, that was also told to me, like, oh, why don't you just do that? And then other doctors said to me, like, oh, don't do that. That's terrible. And one doctor said, like, you could try the oral one. And if you hate how you feel, you can always stop it. And then it will, you know, all of that will stop.
Right. Because Lupron is an implant. You have it in you.
Yeah. But also, you know, those are really just, first of all, you can't do them forever. I think it's only right. for 3 months.
Right. They don't close menopause. They just halt the hormonal changes.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like a chemical menopause for, you know, a short period of time. And why would you do something that's only going to help you for 3 months? Like everything will come back. You know, one woman in my group was told to get pregnant to stop, you know, to help her endo.
That's a solution, I guess.
Right. Well, you know, if you're pregnant, most of the time, you know, the hormones will, you know, put the pain into pause, but it doesn't stop it, and you can't be pregnant permanently. So,
right.
She was told that by her doctor. I'm sorry, I should have clarified. Her doctor told her she had just had a baby, and her symptoms came back. And the doctor said, "Well, until we can figure out what to do for you, why don't you just get pregnant again?"
Right.
Yeah.
Well, we definitely need more doctors with expertise in this area. That would really help.
Mm-hmm.
Would you say that's true?
I think definitely need more doctors that have expertise in this area. And beyond that, more doctors that are not experts in it, but that know about it well enough to know that I'm not an expert in this, but this is, you know, suspicion. Here's somebody who can go check it out for you.
Right. You have to know what you know and know what you don't know.
Right. Right.
Which is what I dive in before I go to work every day.
That's so beautiful.
Yeah. I dive in that I should know what I know what I don't know and treat every person with dignity and respect.
Wow.
And that's what everybody should do. It sounds so simple. It sounds so simple, right?
It sounds so simple, but it's still so big. Like, it's really so beautiful. Your patients are so lucky.
You know, it's hard, I have to say. I dive in it, but it's not as easy to put it to actual, you know, real life. It's hard. We're under a lot of pressure, mm-hmm. right? And there's constant flux of knowledge. It's really hard,
mm-hmm.
right? But I'm here for your side of the story and your experiences. And I have to tell you that it was so incredibly generous of you to share this. And first of all, you should have a complete refuah.
Thank you.
I daven for you. You know that, right?
Yes. Thank you. Also,
I'm still davening. Yeah.
Thank you. That's. I'm so touched by that. Thank you.
You know, I mean, you had, like I said, it's an odyssey. You had this massive 10-year journey.
It was a massive journey, and I have to, you know, validate that for myself. And at the same time, I'm also able to, you know, like I said, you know, everything happened at the time it was supposed to happen. I recognize that. But one thing that I recognize all the time is that this happened after I had my kids. For me, the timing was, you know, I can't say the timing was good, but the timing was lucky for me, because so many women have this interfere with their, you know, getting pregnant, staying pregnant, causes fertility problems, you know, and sometimes
say that, though, that's more endometriosis than adenomyosis, by the way.
You know, I don't even know.
It is true. Actually. Yeah. We talked about this with Dr. Yandorf.
Okay. Well, and obviously if you have adenomyosis, and you want to have kids, you cannot have a hysterectomy.
Right.
So, you know, that takes one option off the table for relief, you know, for a cure for you. Right. I mean, that is the only cure. You can only cure adenomyosis, and you cure it with a hysterectomy. Everything else is treatment and management.
Right.
But yeah, so I'm really grateful for that. I have to, you know, I have to recognize that, you know, which is another thing for people to know. It's, you know, you have to find the right people, because sometimes this is tied in with your fertility and having kids and infertility. And it's so sad when there's so much going on.
Absolutely.
But also makes it so important to find the right people who can help you.
Right. Right. Well, that's really a really important take home message. Listen to your gut and find the right people. If you have to summarize it with two things, that's what I would say.
Yeah.
You have a third?
You know what? Be kind to yourself.
Right.
Because, you know, there were times when I said, like, okay, what's wrong with me? Why can't I handle this? Well, because there was something wrong with me and I couldn't handle it. and I shouldn't have had to. And then also, like I said, you know, the times that I pushed myself, you know, recovering from surgery really made me have to not push through the pain. Right. And not have to do things because, I was tempted to a lot of times, but I had to stop myself and say, you know what? You can't, you want to recover from this the right way. And at least that, but really if you're in pain, then you shouldn't have to push yourself either. I mean, right. You know, obviously we all have to do what we have to do every day, but, you know, and if, you know, you're not going to do surgery for whatever reason, I mean, even endo, you know, it can be expensive. It can, you know, there are many reasons that people might have to not do surgery. You know, do your research and find out how to manage it. And because I really did do a lot of research and I found out about a whole bunch of hormonal options that were just not, and the more I learned about it, the more I learned, no, I don't want to do this. So after that first time that I got bullied into it, I said, no, I'm not going to. You know, so do that. Like, don't let yourself get bullied or bulldozed into something that doesn't feel right to you. Do your research. Know that, yes, if you don't want to do surgery, there are other options. So if you're being told, oh, surgery is the only answer, it's not always.
And medicine is constantly changing. So what we're talking about right now, right?
Yes.
What is this, December 23rd, 2022?
Uh-huh.
Is that today?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
No, it's the 22nd.
22nd. December 22nd, 2022. You know, it changes in a heartbeat.
It changes. Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So people have to keep that in mind, especially I think this is a rapidly moving field. I think that there's really just an increasing, like you keep talking about, in the past 2.5 years, there's more awareness. That's rapidly changing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so which is a good important thing.
Yes, thank God. No, and like I said, people like you who are talking about it are helping, really, really helping.
That's so why I'm doing this, because I learned a lot from other people, and this is so like not the kind of thing I normally do.
Right. No, it's really putting yourself out there, even anonymously, right? I'm adding an addendum to this talk because my interviewee correctly pointed out to me that when I mentioned endometrial ablation, I was incorrect in this context because endometrium is the lining of the uterus, and I'm not talking about, in this context, getting rid of or ablating the entire lining of the uterus. I was referring to endometriosis ablation or ablation of endometriosis lesions. And by the way, this shows how many patients become so knowledgeable. I am not an expert, again, in this at all. I'm a pediatrician, and I need to be humble enough to correct myself, also because I don't want to obviously mislead the audiences. So again, when I referred to endometrial ablation, I was incorrect. I meant ablation of endometrial lesions or endometriosis ablation. And while I'm here making a postscript, I'm going to point out again at the end of the story that everybody's situation is different. This is my interviewee's story. It is her lived experience, but please, I want to advise caution that this is not medical advice, and there are different ideas about this, that there can be a time and a place for ablation of endometrial lesions as opposed to excision. So I really recommend that you do not take this as medical advice, and you do get a good clinician to work with. I will also mention again, as I did at the beginning of the talk, that a lot of these clinicians who are endometriosis specialists do not take insurance. So you have to be very cautious with that. So again, I think it's very, very important to listen to your own gut, to be a good advocate for yourself, and to seek clinicians that are knowledgeable and experienced and will listen to you and partner with you.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the JOMA Preventative Health Podcast. If you've enjoyed this, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts and share this with your friends. For more information, check out our Instagram at JOMA_org. Check out our website, www.joma.org, that's JOMA.org, or email us at health@joma.org.